introduce our speaker for tonight. Yes, you all guessed it, celebrating 19 years.
Hi, everybody. My name is Daryl. I'm anorexic and a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Daryl.
I'm very grateful to be here. And one thing that I want to say is this meeting, even though it's not in Guadalajara, I listen to speakers. And the last two I've listened to have really been great. And what can I say? First of all, Overeaters Anonymous saved my life. And the day before I got absent, I can't really tell you what happened because I weighed about 25, 30 pounds less than I weigh now. And I thought I looked good. And I thought, I didn't really think, I don't think I thought much. I think I just starved. You know, it takes up a lot of time. And it takes up, there's no time to really think. Anyhow, what do I want to say? I'm actually feel a little nervous. And one of the things about these tapes that I've been taking people who got in the program when I did in 1987, around that time, and it's really interesting because I think in that time, there's like, I don't know if there's generations or what it is, but there's certain things that I was taught, you know, and it was about staying absent no matter what. And what I can tell you is I had a sponsor who taught me to stay absent no matter what. And that means that for me, I eat three meals a day. Now, if you spent the day with me, I actually eat a lot. I cycle a lot. And I'm blessed. I mean, I know I've had three anorexic sponsors who have died. So, and one person who I talk to on the internet probably every day and through email, who knows I'm here right now, who knows, and as soon as he knew I was here, he stopped calling, you know, because it's who really wants to get better, you know. In the first step, it talks about who really, I don't know exactly the words in the A, 12 and 12, but it talks about who really wants to do this, unless it's about saving my own life, and you know, I had to be willing to go to any length. And that willingness came despite myself. I was someone who, as I was sitting in hospitals after hospitals, two hospitals, one of them brought in OA panels. And I hated that. And I did. I just, it's like the person who's not here right now. You know, I didn't want to hear the message because I didn't want to get better. I was comfortable being miserable. And, but the seed, the gift of this program is the seed was planted, and the language is very different here. You know, get a sponsor. I shared here 3 years ago. Remember, I shared this. I asked my stepmother to be my sponsor, and she wasn't in the program. And she said no, you know. And then I asked my boss, and she wasn't in the program either. I didn't know the person had to be in the program. Unless, how am I supposed to know? I just guessed. You know, I guessed wrong, but I guessed. And thank God they both said no. And then I got a sponsor in the program who really, really, to this day, I'm very grateful. And we worked on food. I remember she said, go to the meeting and share about food. That's why you're there. You know, there's lots of talk about, now I'm absent, I see that I've got a lot more stuff. It's not about food, but if I'm starving, if I'm afraid, if I feel fat, it's not about my mother that day. You know, it's about the food. I mean, I'm coming to Overeaters Anonymous. And what else can I tell you? My life pretty much was, I think, very hard, and I lived with my mom. My parents divorced when I was 7. I lived with my mom, and I slept with my mom until I was 16. There was sexual abuse with my mom and my dad, and, you know, which affected me, and which affects me, and many things. My brother died of a heroin overdose in the backyard, and then he wasn't found for 5 days, and the gardener found him. And my brother Stan. And many things, many things. But I think that was the kicker when my brother died, that my dad gave me Valium that day. You know, because I guess that that's what my family did. You know, there was a feeling and there was Valium. And, well, it wasn't just a feeling. I mean, it's not just like, oh, I feel sad. I mean, somebody died. So I think that my dad just did what he needed to do. And, so, as I really learned not to feel that, when I got absent, I felt that. And I miss him. You know, he was great. And people who have died from this disease, I mean, inside or outside the program, human beings are fabulous. And so this disease took my brother, and I never understood. I remember I thought, why didn't he talk to me? Why didn't he talk to me? And no human power could have relieved the situation. No human power. I couldn't have helped my brother. But it's very interesting. No human power, but for me, we're two more of God is. And when this woman who helped me had the experience of someone who had helped her, she carried this message, this language, this love, this unconditional love that I searched in my mother's bed. You know, I searched for it. It wasn't there. I also, you know, one of the things is I repeated patterns, not because I was bad, but because it's what I knew. And I had a tennis coach who abused me sexually. I had He was a coworker, working at a restaurant, and he too, you know, I mean, I just took whatever I could get, and sometimes I still struggle with that, but there's a certain sense of integrity that comes with abstinence, and what I can say in the beginning of my abstinence is all I did was I worked on the food. We didn't talk about many feelings in the beginning, you know, and what I was eating before I got to the program was a bran muffin. This is how old I am. I'm going to be 40. This is how old I am. I would watch Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley. I don't know if any of you remember that, but in an hour, it took me to eat this bran muffin. In an hour, with these little bite-sized things. And because it's all I was going to give myself. And so I needed it to last, and I was freezing, and I was freezing so I would have coffee. And, you know, the gift now is the only thing that really stayed with me. I've gotten my health back, you know, but the thing that stays with me is when I'm cold, like, I'm anemic, so I get cold very fast, and my circulation's not too good. I had top ramen with Weight Watchers non-fat yogurt, and my sponsor's great. She said, Daryl, she was from New York, Daryl, she'd say, the person needs to eat you don't need to eat the non-fat, you know. I would take the grease off my pizza. She'd say the 300 pounders would take the grease off their pizza, not you, you know. I went to the store. She said, you're going to go to the store. Instead of non-fat milk, I bought low-fat and I mixed them. You know, have this and something else. I mean, it was so sweet. I pray that everybody has somebody that conscious and that caring to... Because that's what I needed. And this woman invited me to her house. I mean, don't go to your family's room at my house. She helped me. I separated from my family for a while because when I separated from my family, I got abstinent. I don't know if that makes any sense to people, but a lot of my rage and my resentments and the stuff that started to come up, I called her for about 60 days with my phone. I remember she said to me, you don't need to call me anymore with your food. I thought, oh my God, she doesn't love me anymore. Oh my God. had to talk about others. We talked about food, obviously. And but as the feelings came up, what can I say? I was angry. I was scared. She taught me about in the second step about and that first step for me was all about listening to somebody else. One of the things I have a sponsee, the only other person in the program where I am, Letty, she would drop dead for this meeting right now. The nice thing is she speaks English, so we listen to the tapes together. I've given her some tapes. And, but she, I forget what I was going to say. Involved in the program. I didn't get involved because someone said get involved. I mean, my sponsor told me get to a meeting every day. Call me, call somebody else, get to a meeting and stay absent. And everything else is a bonus, honey. That's what she would say. And by she shared every meeting. And by sharing every meeting, I got to know people. And one of the little, I just want to share a little miracle gift before I forget. I live in Guadalajara. It's a big city in Mexico, but it's in Mexico. And, I was teaching a family who's from here, who I was teaching their daughter, and the mom was there. They're very soon. I'm actually going to see them on Tuesday. She said, one week my daughter's going to come, the next week I'm going to come with my mom, the next week I have friends coming. And I thought, I walked into work on Monday morning, and this is the week that our friends are here. So I walked in the room, and I a classroom, and I said, you're Renee's friends, right? And she said, I know you. You're Daryl, I know you from Overeaters Anonymous. I'm Annette, I haven't seen you in 15 years. And they're like the little gifts. And she was the third person in our meeting that night. So that was nice. You know, that was more a gift for me than it was for her. And we got to hang out a couple days. And so, anyway, through my absence, through the time, that sponsor moved. And I got another sponsor. And I've had a bunch of sponsors. I've had sponsors. The person who's helping me now is my sponsor. She was my sponsor, my second and third sponsor. And so that's 19 years later, so she knows me. And but all these people that I have had, I don't know if anyone remembers E.G., little small E.G., who was... She was great, raspy voice, like she very much intimidated me. We had a Wednesday night anorexic bulimic meeting at the federal building, 17 floors up. Do you know how many anorexics ran up those stairs? I wasn't one of them, but there was a bunch, and it was a very important meeting for a lot of them, a lot of us. And that was me. I got my first sponsor, but E.G. became my sponsor, and I did my first four-step with her. And when I had 6 months, she said, now it's time to do your four-step. You've got a month. You've got a month to do it. And she did this great thing. She said, the four-step is you're going to write down your resentments, your fears against, you know, your secret steals, lying, all that stuff. And this is like a chalkboard, and you've got all these white spots on it, white specks. And when you do your four-step, you're going to clear, it's like an eraser, you're going to clear away all these white specks. You're going to have a clear chalkboard. And that was very important. And she said, go to me, and I read it to her in her car, and a bunch of things like that. And then E.G. was my sponsor more. And then I had another one. I did another inventory. I did another inventory, and I always share this. I had 106 resentments towards my mom. Just my mom. So, I mean, I'm starving, and I'm starving more and more and more because I'm having more and more resentments. I'm having more and more fear, and I can't take it, so I have to starve. I have to. And then when I didn't want to starve, and the people who loved me, like my grandma and my mom, who didn't understand, my granny would say, just eat, Mama, just eat. I will, Granny, I will. And I went and did the same thing. I couldn't. I would walk into a malt shop and think I drank the malt. I could get full by just walking into the malt shop. And I would go next to it, I would tell my boss, I drank it, it was good. because I was so afraid of being found out. But the disease is found out. It's found out. It's very, it's there. If I'm, you know, 90 pounds, I don't look good. 97 pounds, I didn't look good. And so I was in a locked ward. They took the keys away from my car. You know, I couldn't drive. I went in this locked ward, and I was doing sit-ups at 3 o'clock in the morning on the floor where they were flashing a flashlight on me, and I'm just stretching, and it's all okay. And I got out of there, and I got worse because I just want to go back to the gym. And so a little bit, I just want to fast forward here. I have till 6:20. Okay. I think what I want to share a little bit about is what's happening. The core work keeps happening. I just, what I had to do after I got abstinence, I had to learn how to live with being abstinent. I remember my sponsor would say, you need to go eat with somebody every week out. You need to go eat with someone or have somebody at your house. And I remember I was so afraid, what do I do? When am I going to go to the bathroom? Where do I put the fork? What do I say? How do I look? And they were just going to the bathroom, you know, but I was so afraid. So it was easier to stay at home. It was easier to isolate. I went to bed at 7. I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't answer the phone. And it's a disease that affects a lot of people around me. It was very sad to watch. And the resentment at my mother was awful. I had such anger that I would go home. You know, my mother was the person who wouldn't open the door for me. I'd come home and she'd unlock it, and then she'd leave. She'd never open and say hello. So I had a resentment. And so one day I opened that door, and I, boom, and I broke the picture, you know. And then another day was my birthday, and I asked her if I could, if she would lend me her car for my driving test. No, and I smashed that motherfucker, you know, like, boom. And she bought it for my birthday, but it didn't matter. And she said something to me, like, I think she said, you didn't eat, did you? I said, I did. She said, you're losing weight. I said, no, I didn't. I took the phone, and I threw it. And my sponsor would call that the anorexic rage. And thank you, God, I don't do that anymore. So needless to say, a lot of work had to be done with my mom. A lot of work had to be done with me. A lot of work had to be done with a lot of people around me. And my mom, I didn't spend a lot of time with her. And a lot of, you know, my mom died almost 6 years ago. And she had Alzheimer's. She had Pick's disease, Alzheimer's, which, you know, basically she's going to become a vegetable. And it was very, I worked a lot on my mom, and I made amends. And we were okay. I mean, what I can share with you is we were okay in the eyes of me, in my soul, and her soul. And in the soul, I think, of Overeaters Anonymous. In the world outside where it looked like, why wasn't I there every day taking care of her? It didn't look so good. But I think what I have to know is Overeaters Anonymous has taught me that there's a way that I need to take care of myself. Not so much take care of myself, but it's a way to... I think I would, the less time I spend with her, the better off we both were. I think that that's it. I think it wasn't... There's a thing I was talking to a sponsee the other day. And an old sponsee, and I was... We're talking about people taking care of themselves. And sometimes in overzealous, I can take care of myself so much that I can hurt another human being. Sorry, I can't take you home. I have to, like, go do something for me. Sorry, I have to do this. No, I can't talk to you. Can you just... I have to... No, I can't. I can't. I have to... Remember once my sister said to me, just because you're in that program doesn't mean that everything's okay. And, you know, I turn my whole life over to God, and I get what I get. And, but I have to really be careful. Mexico's taught me a lot about being loving, and because they have no schedule. It's a little different. So, I can tell somebody to hang on a sec because the meeting starts. I mean, if I'm not here, someone else is going to speak, and I'm going to be, you know, I'm the one who loses. So, I mean, there's a certain discipline, but, I don't know, where was I going from there? Anyhow, my mom died. It was very hard. It was very sad. The last thing that she said to me was, and she had a trach. had cancer inside her gum or her cheek. So they cut off, they cut her cheek off, and they sewed, I think, the muscles from, the skin from her leg and the muscles from her back or the other way around on her face. She had a trach. So my mom had this Pick's disease, so she was out of it, but she wasn't out of it enough to know what had happened. So she never left the house anymore, and it was very sad. And I was able to go with her and take her to take her on walks. And, I mean, it was okay. The best time I had with my mom was when she was in her coma. Now, that's a great share, but... sorry. No, it's true. She probably had a better time with me in her coma, too. I mean, living with me wasn't a joy, wasn't that wonderful either. I mean, living with an anorexic, a practicing anorexic, is, you should get paid. And, it's very hard watching somebody die. I was dying at her. I was dying at my mom. So I'm very blessed that the program taught me about amends and about 9-step and there's a lot of things I heard, like the best, 9-step I can, making amends to myself is to stay abstinent. That's the best loving thing, most loving thing I can do to myself, because the most awful thing I did to myself was nearly kill myself. And so my mom died, and through this time I just want to share that I liked guys, and then I had a girlfriend, and then we got married, and we were together 9 years. And the last time I shared at this meeting 3 years ago, we were having problems, and we're not together anymore. And it's a little strange, but it's okay. It's okay. And but my mom, I remember my mom said, I love you, and it's okay. And my dad, always invited my partner Beverly everywhere. And so I'm blessed in that way. I mean, I'm not a very simple character. I have a lot of stuff, but I think that makes me me, and I really love that about me, that I'm not A to Z straight line. It would be kind of boring, So, anyhow, the people around me, the friends I have now, are very caring, very loving, and accept me for, I think my work is to accept me more. And, so anyhow, as this is ending, one of the things that happened when my mom died was I stopped my, we had a problem with money, with the money, the estate, and my dad, I got a lawyer, and that kind of ruined everything, and I stopped talking to my mom, to my dad and my sister, and my dad said some really awful things, and he sent back all my elementary school ribbons from playing handball and all that kind of stuff. And I don't have a daughter anymore. I don't need you. I don't want you. And if I die, he'll come to my funeral. He'll come to the hospital. I have two. I have 3 kids now. I have one. I lost one to, what do you say? I can't believe all this stuff is coming back. It's interesting what comes back, isn't it? I lost one to heroin overdose and the other one to lack of consideration for my feelings. Now, if anybody knows me, I'm not like that. But my dad didn't really know me like you guys know me, because no other human being knows me like a compulsive overeater knows me. And so, anyhow, what I can share with you today is when I moved to Mexico, my dad had no idea. He had no idea I was out of the country, and he had called my lawyer for something, and she said I was living in South America. I don't even know where South America is. But, and then I had another partner who's still in my life now, it's another adventure that I'm walking through. But we had separated, and I was a mess. And my partner's best friend, Sulema was staying with me because she didn't want to leave me by myself in my house because I was a mess. Abandonment, I don't do well with anybody leaving. Just going to the airport, I cry. I didn't even leave the country. I just go into the airport. I was a mess. I hug my dogs, and I just... It's just who I am. It just rips me. It just rips me. And she said, you need to call your family. I said, no, my dad doesn't want to talk to me. He says, write him. And I wrote him, and 4 days later, he called me in Mexico. And since then, which is a year and some thing. We're doing really well. You know, he picked me up from the airport. We're going to have lunch tomorrow. He's just sweet, and he's so sweet. He knows all about my problems with my relationship, and he said, the other day he said, well, I hope it works out. And I remember when he said, well, are you dating a man or a woman now? And I said, well, that's okay. I'd like it to be a man, but if it's a woman, that's okay. And, you know, he should marry the man, I think. And, but anyhow, how sweet. Then we could both have two men and two women and just, yeah. But, anyhow, I see a lot about through me, through my dad. I mean, it's very, now that I know, I feel like for the first time I have a father, and now I see, because my brother and my sister were adopted. I wasn't supposed to be here. I came, it was a surprise to everybody. Yeah. And, so, like, the genes, my mom died, so I don't really get to see where I come from. But now I have my dad. We're very similar. I mean, we go to bed, like, when it's light out. You know, we do that. It's true. He sits on the couch, like me, and we fall asleep. What did he say? He said, I was telling him about something. He says, you're just like me. You don't really express how you feel. Or it's hard for you, something like that. And it's so interesting. It makes me so happy that I see where I come from. It makes me very sad when I see where I come from. And how I wish he would have done some work, you know, because it would have helped me to, like, do less, but that's not true. I have a lot of work to do, and I see how he picked me up from the airport. He was talking about this woman who he's with, who's a companion, who he's not in love with, who's with him. And he looked at me and he started crying. He said, I live a very lonely life. And it just made me so sad. And I said, you know, Dad, I just love you. He said, I love you too. He can't hear well, so he hears what he hears. But I have that relationship today, and I'm very blessed. And that's basically where my life is today. When I see an anorexic, you know, I get very grateful that I've gained my weight. When I get how hard it is, I get how scary it is. I remember I thought I would die. And I thought everything was in my stomach. And now I have, well, a lot of people say don't have a stomach. But I know I have a stomach. And it's pretty good. You know, it's for me, I'm going to be 40. Is it the 40-year-old stomach? Or is it the recovery. You know, being a woman, men and boys have flat stomachs. And I wore my pants, so I have a hard time putting, you know, these pants that fit me are very uncomfortable. You know, they're not so uncomfortable. I mean, I know that I feel good. I feel like I don't want to be a little boy anymore. You know, there's a price to pay to be a little boy. I miss out on intimacy. I miss out on being a woman. I miss out on a lot of things. But that's still my process, and it's still I really wish that, you know, I was talking to somebody, and said, I'm going to be 40. He says, well, you don't look more. You don't look much past 30. And I, thank you. But there's also immaturity to being anorexic. You know, I mean, I think I'll be an anorexic to my core. And I'm grateful I look young. I mean, I don't want to look 60 at 40. I mean, I don't want anyone who's 60. I apologize. But, but there is an immaturity. There's a youngness. And I don't know if I'll ever look my age. I pray that I act my age. And so, for me, Overeaters Anonymous has saved my life, has given me a life. I wish there was more meetings in Guadalajara. I've shared with people. There is a group that meets every day. But for me, I started going, and I have one meeting a week that I started with this woman, Letty, who's just very sweet. And but the other meetings are every day, but they're about 2 hours long with six people. They last, you know, you can share whatever you want for half an hour. And I would feel worse after, because that's all. And I think, again, it's better if I don't go, because the way I looked was not pleasing to many people. My energy, angry, is not pleasant. So one of the other thing, character defects. I'm silent, withholding. I don't say how I feel, like my dad. You know, but my dad's another program I do, so I've got work to do. So basically, I'm very blessed to be here. I'm very grateful for 19 years. I don't know where I'm going to be, where I'm going to end up. I always come back here thinking I'm going to come back here. I don't know. I love Spanish. I love the language. I think it's a beautiful language. I love the people. It's a group of people that, you know, like, I think it's like meeting people. We're just different, just loving. And there's people who aren't in the program, who aren't in Mexico, who are loving too. I can't even say that everybody's, not everybody's loving, but a lot of people are just loving. Anyhow, thank you very much for letting me share. Questions? Are there questions? Anybody have a question? Well, there. You're welcome. How do I work on step 11? Sati prayer meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. Basically, what I do every morning, what I've done for 19 years, is I get on my knees, I say the first three, I say the Serenity Prayer, and I say it in Spanish. It's quite fun. And then I say the first three steps, and then I say the seventh step prayer, the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, and I pray for whatever. And sitting still, Walter, has never been an easy one for me. And sometimes I'm able to sit still or I write. Sometimes I get to God by writing. And I, you know, sought their prayer. The prayer I got, the meditation, I don't do that much. I do sit. And when I sit, I think, well, what is this? But there is I was sitting here, and I was sitting in Santa Monica and looking at the beach and thinking, as I have a lot of turmoil in my life today about this relationship and lots of things, I thought, when I was 6 months abstinent, I don't know if anyone remembers Ellen, I don't know if anyone was around, she died, she was someone who was in the program for a long, long time, and I had quit a job, I was really depressed, I wasn't working, my sponsor said, come to my work, I said no, and I hung up the phone, and then Ellen called me, she says, meet me at the beach. I sat with her on the beach. I don't know what happened, but that saved me. That helped me. And so my 11th step is really that. It's my conscious contact with God that I know my life is... I don't even say my life is better with it, because I don't try it without it. It's just what I do. Now that I'm... Well, okay. Does my anorexic disease come back after all this time? Great question. Thank you, Danica. Thank you. When I have a feeling that's intense, I lose my appetite still. And I think it definitely is there. And I thank God it's there. If not, I would leave. It's the thing, I think, that keeps me here. Plus, the way I live sometimes is very crazy. So the program helps my mind. But the thoughts do come, oh my God, I feel fatter, I feel uncomfortable. I talk to my sponsor, and I think for today, you know, I go back to basics. My basics were, I would have my breakfast, a sandwich and something else for lunch, and three things for dinner. But now in Mexico, for instance, dinner is lunch. The main meal's at lunch. But, yeah, my head comes back. And I call. I do what I did. I call people, and I remember crying on the phone with people just to, like, I eat. Or I'd go to a meeting. The things were great about meetings back then was we'd go to dinner, we'd go to a meeting at 8, it'd last till 9:30, and then we'd go to bed. It saved me. It kept me till I could just go to bed or make a phone call. So I call people, and I talk to people who see me, who can tell me the truth. That's what I do.
Thank you so much.
De veras? Okay. I'm going to say this ready prayer in Spanish. Dios, concédenos la serenidad para aceptar las cosas que no podemos cambiar, valor para cambiar las cosas que podemos, y sabiduría para reconocer la diferencia. Thank you. Justin.
Hi, thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
After 19 years in program, are you now able to see yourself, your body? Are you able to see yourself?
What a great question. The after this much time, 19 years in the program, can I see my body? Great question. You know, not being looking in the mirror and seeing somebody who's fat, I can't say percentage. It's like a day at a time. Most of the time, most of the time I can see I'm okay. I can see I'm strong, I'm healthy, I'm not fat. But there are days where I can't see myself, where I get uncomfortable, in my pants, or I can look in the mirror and go, I'm fat. Still, but I know now that when I'm fat, I'm having a feeling. Before I got into the program, I just thought I was fat. Because I didn't have anybody to tell me I was having a feeling, because I shoved everybody out of my life so no one could tell me. You're not answering the phone, there's no one left to talk to me. So I did that. So, great question. For the most part, I see a healthy woman, but I also am distorted. And so some days, no. And I need people to help me.
When you say that you're not abstinent, does that mean doesn't necessarily mean you're throwing up or anything,
it would
just
mean
not eating, period, right?
For me, what does not abstinent mean for me? That would mean that I eat two meals, boom. If I eat two meals and a carrot, boom. I have to have three meals, and they can't all be carrots, they can't all be water, they can't all be juice and carrots. You know, I know what the meals are. I know, the great gift is I know if I'm absent, I know if I'm not. And I pray to never know that I'm not.
So in other words, starving yourself is part of the food.
I come from the anorexic side. So that's it. If I don't eat three meals a day, I'm in a month, I'm dead. They give me a month. Quick, can I have a quick one?
Thank you so much for sharing. You started the process of becoming abstinent and detaching from your family to keep you abstinent, but you also described kind of how your mother and grandmother would try to help you and say, uh-huh. I love you through the process. Can you describe, like, to have these loving family members, but at the same time, you know, that you have to detach from them?
Great question. The process of how I detach from my family and how the people who, like, and how they were, I can't write. That was your question. I think I talked a little in and out and went back and forth. Basically, when I was starving and when I was very sick, that's when they told me what to do. When I got abstinent, I didn't ask them. So I think I confused my story. Basically, these people who I couldn't stand, my mother, my grandmother I loved, but my mother couldn't stand, who would tell me things, I didn't change a thing. But when I got abstinent, I think I just went to my sponsor. I didn't go back to them. And I detached from them, and I wrote them a letter. I wrote my mom a letter, I wrote my dad a letter, saying that I loved them, but that I needed time. And I didn't see him for a while. And so that's what happened, if that makes sense. I hope that clears it up. And I think that's it. Thank you so much. This has been fun.